Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Serviceability for COBOL Working Storage in the CIGS Environment. Today's presenter is Paul Albrecht. Paul has worked in CIGS Level 2 customer support for 21 years. During that time, he has had extensive experience with COBOL and language environment in CIGS. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Paul.
Thank you, Joseph. Hi, I'm Paul. Today's presentation, I'm going to cover some serviceability ideas for COBOL working storage. It'll be in primarily the CICS environment. Joseph, could we move to slide 2? I'm going to be covering the working storage section, accessing working storage in a CIGS system dump. I'm going to talk about the linkage section, kind of how it relates back into working storage. And I'm going to discuss some ideas, labeling and user trace. Joseph, slide 3, please. COBOL working storage is basically where the programmer puts the data for program processing. It's statically allocated, and it's going to last for the life of the program. I'm going to be talking about it in the CICS context, which is basically the working storage section, and I'm not going to be going into, it's going to be in a non-threading environment. Joseph, slide 4. I'm going to talk about accessing working storage in the CIGS dump, how to find it with LE data. Another method would be the CICS APS parameter or dump parameter. How to find it through the LE common anchor. And then I'm going to go in and talk about how you can find the working storage sections for multiple programs. How LE designates it within a heap structure or heap storage. And where that all fits into CIGS storage. Basically give you a map of what's surrounding the working storage areas. And primarily, storage violations, why the SAAs may not be overlaid in many cases. Slide 5, please. I'm going to talk about the accessing the COBOL working storage with the LE data dump format. And to start off, we need the language environment common anchor area, the CAA, and that's always going to be located at 194, offset 194 from the user TCA. And I'm pretty sure all of you are pretty familiar with this, the verb exit of the LE data, but there's an example. And what it does, of course, is it'll format the language environment control blocks and the language control blocks themselves. Now, the LE blocks are going to be formatted first, and the language blocks are going to be below it. Now, for working storage, the language blocks that I find of interest is the COBOL language list entry, which gives me the program name and load address, and the TGT, which gives me the working storage length and the working storage address in the dump. And that TGT is going to be the primary method of, the neatest method to get to it. Okay, Joseph, slide 6. Here's an example of the CLLE and the TGT, and these will be, at the bottom of the LE formatted output. CLLE will give you your program name and load point, and the working storage length and working storage address is going to be located in the TGT, which will be right below it. So now you have the working storage length, and you have a working storage address, and you can access it in browse mode in the dump. Slide 7, please. You can also access it in the CIGS format with the DFHPD APS keyword, and it's going to give us basically the same results as LE data, but with more information. It formats out the AP domains control blocks along with the LE and language control blocks. And you'll get the TCA, all the CICS control blocks for that particular transaction with the addition of the LE formatted areas. And the angle, just to make a note, the angled brackets around the specific parameters, they're needed. And again, the COBOL control blocks are going to be at the bottom of the report, and it's going to be in the same format as LE data, as I discussed on the prior pages. Page 8, please. Now, it's going to be some times where the LE data format is not going to work, usually due to overlays. So I wanted to add this page into the presentation, and it's basically a map that once you have the TCA address, there's a good chance you can get to the COBOL working storage by running this map in browse mode. You go to the TCA plus 0 gets you to the system TCA, plus 94 will get you to the LE anchor. And from the LE anchor, you can go over to the process control block. And it's just eventually it will get you down to the current TGT where you can, pick up that same information, the working storage length and the working storage address. Page 9, please. Okay. Each high-level language link, each high-level language link level program has its own copy of the CAA. It's got its own stack segments, and it's got its own copy of the heap segments. Now, the stack segments are for the register save areas, or what they're called now dynamic storage areas, and the heap segments will be primarily used for the working storage areas. Slide 10. I've got a couple of programs. I'm going to point out a method of finding the working storage for all the link levels. Now, for example, if a dump occurs while program C is in control, you currently have a method of finding program C's working storage section through the LE data. Here's a method if you need to find or if you have an interest in the prior link levels working storage sections, here's how you can get to them. Again, each program is represented by a language environment common anchor area. These CAAs, you can use these CAAs to access each program's working storage section. Now, in the LE data formatted dump, you can find the EDB, and it's going to reside under the CAA. The EDB parent field is going to point to the prior CAA or the prior CAA for the prior link level program. You can use this prior CAA to access the prior program's working storage with the LE data format. And you can actually chain back until the EDB parent field is containing zeros. And I've got a little excerpt underneath there of what the EDB is going to look like in a LE data formatted dump. And again, the parent field will point to the prior CAA. Slide 11, please. Here's a display of this method, basically. We'll start with, say, program C. And from the CAA, you can get to the EDB. EDB parent field will take you back to program B. Using the same method, you can go back to program A. When the EDB parent field is zeros, you've just reached the end of the chain. And the IP verbex LE datas that are underneath the EDB, this is going to show you the LE format for each specific program or run unit. And from that, you can now view three distinct working storage sections. So it's basically a way of not just finding your current working storage, but everyone else's at each specific link level. We move on to slide 12. Now, working storage is going to reside in the LE heap segments. And we'll start with the actual heap eye catcher in these areas in the dump. We're going to be followed by a heap control section, and then the working storage section is going to follow. So if you go to a working storage area and you back up, you will eventually come to a heap eye catcher area. What makes COBOL kind of neat is its working storage is going to be contiguous. And it's all going to reside in the heap segment. And underneath it, you'll probably find there'll probably be a free heap segment or part of the heap segment that's available for additional use. That's what it kind of looks like from the LE perspective, how it fits in within a heap area. Can we move to slide 13, please? Now, here's what it's going to look like in KIX. We're going to have a leading storage accounting area, followed by the heap, eye catcher, and the heap segment. We have the heap control section. We're going to have a heap pointer, segment length, a little spot for COBOL system area, and then we're going to have the start of working storage. And in this example, I've got a sort of fictitious overlay that starts down towards the bottom of the working storage area and crosses or overruns the end of its working storage area. We've also noticed that it's stopping before the trailing CICS storage accounting areas. Now, this is going to be one of the more difficult types of overlays in the KIX environment. If the storage accounting areas are intact, our storage violation trap is not going to be detecting these types of overlays. Yet they still exist, and yet they have to be diagnosed. Can we go to slide 14? I'd like to move on, more on diagnosing this later, but I'd like to move on to the linkage section. And it's primarily used as passing data between programs. It describes the data being passed by the calling or the linking program. And in KIX, it's going to describe the data being passed in the COM area. And what the linkage section does is it maps the COM area, and it can also be used to map a transaction work area, a terminal control table user area, a myriad of other things that the application needs. But think of it basically as a map. Slide 15, please. In this example, I've got program A calling or linking to program B and linking to program C. And program A is going to pass a part of its working storage section as the COM area. And this is where the data is really going to reside, truly reside. When program B receives the COM area, it's going to map it in its linkage section. It can take that same area and pass it to program C. And again, in program C's linkage section, it will be mapping the same area. The data where it resides in core storage is still going to be over in the program A's area. B and C, their linkage sections are only going to be mapping it and operating on it, but any data changes can be back over in program A. And again, that is when program B passes the same area to program C. Slide 16, please. So we covered what working storage looks like in a dump and how the linkage section is going to play a role in CICS. And as we kind of already know, that the working storage areas are vulnerable to storage overlays. We got perhaps some bad subscripting on occurs clauses, misdefined linkage sections, myriad of other possibilities. And when an overlay occurs in working storage, it can be difficult to determine where it starts or how extensive it is. And this is especially true when the storage overlay does not overrun CICS's storage accounting areas. It's just contained within that heap segment. Slide 17, please. Now, we got some software tools that will map out working storage sections in a dump, and I usually find that they're not used in production. And I've seen a few fail once they've encountered an overlay. And I'm going to introduce an idea or an alternative. Slide 18, please. Working storage, can be considered as a COBOL control block. I'd like you to think about taking it another step forward. Consider labeling the beginning and the end of the working storage area. That way you're going to have some eye catchers in the dump of the start and the end of the area. And here's an example of two COBOL declarations of working storage start, working storage end. Now, I have seen this quite often in dumps, and it can be used as a map once you have the working storage address and its length. If these are labeled and you don't see a working storage end, that part of working storage has been overlaid. And again, underneath that, I have an example of what it looks like in a dump. Slide 19, please. Let's take this one step further. There are a lot of O1 level group items in COBOL that have item elements. And consider a major O1 level group items as separate control blocks within the application. Rather than looking at working storage as one big control block, start splitting it up. And think about physically labeling some of these group items with constants. Now, I'm using begin and after, begin and end labels here on this example, and I've got an O1 filler for COBOL to designate my user record. I've got a begin user record, then start my user record, where I have all my neat values in there, and at the end, I've got an end user record. One of the reasons I use an end statement, where I'm showing an end statement, is these areas can be variable. Each O1 or each grouping within the application can be variable, so you have a beginning and an end marker in there. I'll talk about this more later. Form 20, please. Now, on the prior example, I had O1 level statements. In this example, I've taken my label and actually embedded it within my user record. It'll have the same effect of showing the eye catchers in the dump in the same exact areas. But I want to talk about this, about embedding these structure labels a little bit later on in this presentation. That's 21, please. I'm going to be looking at a COBOL occurs clause as an example. I've been finding these can be pretty vulnerable in working storage in the COBOL environment. I've got my two labels there, these structure labels, an outrec start, outrec end, and my outrecker is going to occur 28 times. Right underneath that, I'm going to show you what it looks like in a core dump. and you've got your outrec start, outrec end. Okay, what does that buy you? A slide 22, please. What if your program gets an OC7, and after reviewing your dump and the application code, you find that the failing instruction involved the use limit field? And this field now is basically containing zeros, and it's no longer packed. I've got a pointer there to the use limit field and what it's going to look like in core storage. Slide 23. Now, if we're using these labels, notice that the outrec start does not have an outrec end label. And also notice that the end user record without the start user record. And this shows us that the user record has been overlaid with zeros and that the outrec is not intact. Basically, by using these labels, your application programmer, just by looking at the dump and understanding that there will be an outrec start and there should be an outrec end, and that there is an end user record without a start or begin user record, shows them that the overlay looks like the overlay started an outrec. Since outrec is part of an occurs clause, it lets the programmer know that perhaps like a trap, like a subscript range trap of SS range, can be used, you know, to diagnose it further. If they go back through the code and cannot determine where the overlay is coming from, they can go back to a subscript range trap. And again, we've got a beginning outrec start, no outrec end, and an end user record end, but no start for the user record. Slide 24, please. Without the labeling, there's an example of this at the top. Rather than with the structure or record labeling, as an example at the bottom. And in this example, the outrec is defined with zeros to start with. And if the prior two MBS pages are also validly containing binary zeros, it's going to be near impossible to determine where that overlay started. But again, if you have these labels, it'll give your application folks or anybody looking at the dump, even vaguely familiar with the program, a fighting chance to find out where that overlay started and how extensive it is. Slide 25, please. I liked the idea of using the end labels. It's going to denote the end of a specific structure. They're going to separate structures from other areas that follow. And again, these structures will be variable in length. And in my examples, I did a begin and end. But those kind of labels, you can get creative with it. You can consider acronyms. And then beginning and end labels can be designated in different ways. And I listed out some ideas. Slide 26. I'm thinking that by adding these labels, it'll provide your programmers a physical map of working storage in the dump. And I'm also thinking it's going to reduce diagnostic time, because it's going to offer a bridge between the compiled application program and the storage dump itself. If a programmer inherits an application and they have to shoot a working storage overlay, it's going to be easier. The labels will offer that map, so to speak. So it'll be easier to diagnose it, and it's going to be a bit more accurate by using the labels. Another thing I was thinking about is that by looking at these labels, they can actually search on them in the application listing and get to those areas rather quickly. in the actual listing itself. And these examples I've been showing, they come nowhere near some of the complexities that I've seen in COBOL applications. They can get really, really complex. And I'm thinking that this labeling is going to make life a bit easier for the application programmers or anybody who has to diagnose problems that occur up in COBOL. Slide 27, please. There's another tool that I found pretty useful in looking at working storage areas, and it's the Kix user trace. And the command is the CICS enter trace num. And this is going to enable the application or the application programmers to produce CICS trace entries. And within these trace entries, it will give them the ability to trace part of a working storage area. So they can sit there and actually monitor it in the Kix trace. As an example, if they encounter an overlay, and by looking at the code, they're not able to determine where it is getting overlaid, they can start using the user trace to give them a hand with this. 28, please. This is the actual form, or here's the manual format for the user trace. You have a trace num, a from area length, and a resource name, and of course an area where exceptions can come back. In this example, I've got execcics enter trace num number 10 from my out rec. My from length is a diag length, and my resource field is going to be called out-rec for my out record. 29, please. Now, we know that out rec is overrunning its lower bounds. We can use the enter trace num command to narrow down the window of its occurrence. We can put two commands in strategic places within the application. And this is where this trace num number is going to come into play. They can actually designate where the trace is actually being produced from the application. You can use 10 in one specific paragraph. You can use 15 in a different area totally. And this is it's a neat way to start mapping stuff out within the application and gives a path back from the trace table into the application. So when the application programmers or system programmers whoever entered the trace nums within the application know exactly where they're coming from. The resource of outrec is going to show up in the trace as I'm about to show. And I wanted to make a point here that the diag length, my from length, will need to be declared separately within the COBOL program. And I just wanted to point that out, especially if we have O1 levels defining, if our labels are kind of outside the program. But let's move on to slide 30, and I'll talk more about this. Here's an example of what the trace points are going to look like in the Kix trace. We're going to have a user event, application program entry, followed by outrec, the resource name. And to actually to look at the full trace, since we're tracing part of working storage in here, our outrec, we'll need to look at the full trace for more details. Slide 31, please. Okay. Here's those same trace points from the abbreviated trace expanded out. And at trace point 073567, notice that outrec, again, this is part, we're tracing part of working storage, our out record. We have an out rec end. We know that out rec is overrunning its lower bounds. And lo and behold, At trace point 073576, the outrec has disappeared. The outrec eye catcher has disappeared. And basically it means between these two trace points, between 567 and 576, the overlay occurred in this example. 32, please. Now you have a window of where the outrec overran its lower bounds. And the application's actions or its processes between those two trace points can be reviewed. We know where the application, where the trace points were put in the application. And there's been a get main and an ask time within that window. And this, again, this is just primarily an example. The application can be reviewed between those two trace points. We know that there's one, there has been a get main and there has been an ask time in there. You can widen the window. You can also close the window up by putting the trace entries closer together. But here's a way of using the CICS trace and this labels to help diagnose what's going on within an application. Slide 33, please. In the prior example, my labels were placed outside of the outrec array, SO1s. And the enter trace num command needed a specific length field, and in this case it was that diag length. I got a value of 140 in there. My labels are outside of the structure. And the structure here is called out, in this case, it's outrec. You can actually move the labels within the structure. As I showed earlier on in the presentation, if these labels are embedded in the data structure, your trace length is a whole lot easier to specify on the ExecCICS under trace num. And at the bottom there, I've got trace num 15. And I'm just using the length of user record as my from length. And what that command will do is trace the actual user record with the begin user record eye catcher and an end user record eye catcher. Slide 34, please. These ideas of labeling and tracing can be applied to transaction work areas and any other types of, any other control blocks that the application can use or has access to. Even areas that are specifically get mained by the application. The ideas are kind of simple. They've been around for a while. I've also noticed them missing in COBOL, and I'm really thinking by structure labels within the application was going to help the application programmers, especially the folks who inherit programs, to map what they see in storage back to their listing. It'll help them find overlays faster once they understand the patterns the patterns of the labels. And if by doing code reviews, they're unable to determine where these overlays are coming from, the user trace can also be used as a trap along with the labels to diagnose the window of where these are occurring within the application. And again, these are just two simple ideas. I'm really kind of hoping that you carry them further. Slide 35, please. So we've covered the working storage section in a KIC system dump. We saw how the linkage section kind of fits in to the whole picture. And I've just introduced labeling structuring within the working storage areas that can be used for diagnostics later on down the road. And I've also introduced using user trace points. Slide 36, please. I've got some references here. The programming guide, the KIC reference, problem determination guide, KIC trace entries in the data areas. A neat one to look at is the language environment debugging guide. along with the language COBOL language reference and programming guide. 37, please. And here's a chart that contains links to a number of sites where we provide valuable online resources for KICS-TS. The CICS-TS support webpage offers a variety of different technical information, and we'd like you to visit the KICS featured documents link for the most requested documents, as well as those identified as valuable in helping answer your questions related to KICS. The My Notification link on all product support pages will let you sign up for weekly email updates for products that you're interested in. And you can follow us on Twitter to get constant updates on KICS-related support news. The webcast for CICS and Omegamon link points you to the webcast conference information. And the IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up and learning quickly.
Thank you, Paul, for a great presentation. At this point, Kathy, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And we do have a question coming through. Michael Narad, your line is open.
Hey, good evening, Paul. Morning, Paul. One thing to watch out for when you do the labels is when you put it on a 01 level by itself and it's not referenced in the program, the optimizer will oftentimes remove it from the listing, and you lose your labels that way. It's one of the things that we ran into here.
Okay.
Something that you haven't noticed, or?
No, I haven't noticed that, no.
But the optic was full. I do know it will drop the unused 01 levels. I can't remember that at the lower optimization levels. It's been a while since I've looked at it.
Okay, I can't recall what optimization settings I used on my compiles.
The default is usually none. That way the source lists and matches the dumps real well.
No, I have not uncovered that, but thank you very much for that information.
Our next question is coming from Robert Zunk. Your line is open.
Okay, thank you. So I have this is more of an observation or a question about product development, but labeling is a really great idea, and it's been used sporadically and inconsistently at best in the industry. So why can't the COBOL compiler have an option to generate labels? And, I mean, this option could have a default of putting the begin and end tags, and at that point, you know, you could use the basic element name to create exactly what you did with your user dash record and so on. You know, the bottom line is, you know, that would be a great enhancement, an optional enhancement that customers could use to say, I want these labels, and let the COBOL compiler do it in a very consistent manner. And then there's no recoding involved. It's a simple recompile of the programs. And voila, you've got the ability to take advantage of this feature.
Robert, that's a great idea. Robert, I can notify the COBOL group and send that over to them in a documented form. I think I can do that.
Sounds great. Thank you.
I'm grinning from ear to ear. Robert, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Our next question is coming from Mike Wendell. Your line is open.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned was a mismatch between linkage areas, and I was wondering, would it be possible or would it be appropriate to have CICS cause an amend if the length of the COM area was less than the declared length of the DFH COM area in the COBOL program? Because it sets up addressability in its startup routines. I have a COM area that's 20 bytes long, but the declared DFH COM area is 2,000 bytes long.
Right.
They're asking for trouble.
I'm trying to think of the code expansions. I'd have to look into it a little bit more, but that also is a great idea. That would prevent a lot of overlays from even starting. Responsible for that. That would probably have to go hand in hand between CICS and the COBOL.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a startup issue when the program first gets control. Of course, all kinds of stuff happens under the covers.
Yeah, I think I can approach Hursley with that idea, because it could be part of the translator expansion. Let me see if I can carry that forward, Michael.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This is great.
And our next question is coming from Wendell Lowell. Your line is open.
Hey, Paul. I related question to the throwing the unreferenced structures away that the previous caller had. And it may be an optimized option, I'm not sure, but what I've seen the compiler do is rearrange the storage so that it's kind of hard to predict where things land based on their order in the source program. I was wondering if that's a compiler option or part of optimize maybe or something like that.
Now, you've noticed this for COBOL?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have to do a zap every once in a while, and it's like, well, there's no telling where it's going to land with the options I use. And if that's across different compilers.
Okay. Actually, it's still going to be, what I find is it's contiguous, but say, depending on how you set up your values.
A lot of times I'll see things just completely reversed, like it starts at the bottom of your declarations and works its way up, but it's probably a compiler option. I can check in.
Wow, I've never noticed that, but yes, I've seen them with what I thought I defined, the structures are a tad bit longer. They're rounding out to double word boundaries at times from yeah. what the compiler did, but in all my testing and playing around with my ideas, I still found them contiguous.
Okay.
Now, for PL1 and C, within the heap areas, that it's a whole different. It seems to be a whole different animal, and LE has to set it up differently to get to these basically to get to those areas really quickly, whereas in COBOL I still found them contiguous.
Okay. I'll play around with the options and check into that. One other comment. The gentleman said, well, why doesn't the compiler just put those things in for us? Something else that's been handy is to, as I'm coding a paragraph that I'm not sure about, I'll put a now entering this procedure.
Okay.
This paragraph name. And I'll move it to a current or a field called current paragraph or something. And then if I go to the dump and find current paragraph, I can see, oh, well, that's the last one I said I was in, at least. That'd be a nice accompaniment to demark my structures, like demark my paragraphs, tell me when I enter and exit one, or at least when I enter one, and then, you know, I can go right there to the dump and say, oh, it was in that paragraph.
Okay. And did you do this with, I'm sorry, did you do this with displays, or?
No, just like if paragraph names, paragraph X, then I'll say at the first statement in paragraph X would be move a constant name or with a string paragraph X into a variable, you know, a field like WS current paragraph or something like that.
Oh, okay, like an internal, having your own internal trace.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. And then I have to look at, well, where was it? Then I can go to the current paragraph field and, oh, it was in that. And then the LE dump with the sim all will, it makes it easy to find that, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it'd be nice if they just did that for me. It's like, create a debug version.
Okay.
And I know we're probably messing with standards and ANSI and all kinds of stuff that you don't have anything to say anything about. But
no, this is kind of straightforward as a, almost like an automatic stack trace.
Yeah.
Out there that you could probably set up with a compiler option.
That would be awesome. Yeah, stack trace, yeah. But at least where I actually was.
Yeah, within the application, rather than you were here at this specific application, we could take it a step forward and dig down a little deeper.
Sure. I mean, they could set up an array and shuffle those stack, you know, the last 15 or whatever number seemed right.
No, that's an idea.
That'd be cool.
And let me, I'll carry that forward, just like automatically adding labels and com area linkage section checking that Michael and Robert brought up.
Okay.
Great.
Well, thanks. Appreciate the presentation. It's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Our next question is coming from Michael Noren. Your line is open.
Hey, Paul. It's Michael again.
Hey.
On the com area test, a couple things, you know, to consider with that is, you know, the first thing I thought about was on initial entry, you know, the high-level program, you know, there is no comm area until you do the get main to get it or supply it in a working storage area.
True.
So you would have to be careful with trying to do an automatic check on that. And I have seen where some, we've really had some programs that were called different ways, and comm area would vary. It just would be up to the program to determine whether the proper length comm area was passed.
You know, I have seen that in the past. Yeah, I have seen that in the past where a 50-byte comm area would be mapped by a 100-byte linkage section.
Right. I mean, where they only use, were going to use part of it out of a standard comm area, or maybe it's a utility program that has several different
inbound
messages to deal with.
Yes.
And based upon the message, it may do, it would do separate passes to the program.
Exactly, and never exceeding the lower boundaries of the original comm area that was being passed in.
Mm-hmm. So that's just something that, you know, first hit me. You have to be careful trying to do a comm area test based upon the labels.
Right, and I'm thinking that for the comm area checking, it would have to be an option that the programmer would choose.
Right.
Exactly, have it as an option rather than putting it in concrete, so to speak.
Right.
But, yes, I have seen that before.
Mm-hmm. And one other comment, you mentioned something on this last caller that the alignments being on double word, 01 levels and 77 levels, best I remember, always on double word alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So you will have the movement around there. And even with, you know, some kind of automated labeling, you have to be careful there because some record formats that you're dealing with or data formats, you know, are coming from other languages and they would not have, you know, you could not put that label inside the record format because now you've phoned your record alignment out. So you'd have to be careful with that, too.
Oh, as in passing data?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, because one program was compiled with, you know, with an automatic labeling that puts a label inside of the structure. Well, you called it with one that, say, an assembler program that didn't have that option.
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay.
And now your alignment is all confused.
Okay, I've countered that with PL1, yes.
But, yeah, that was a couple comments that I thought I would throw back out.
No, I have noticed, yes, I have noticed that before, actually within CICS code,
mm-hmm.
with PL1.
And then the caller that was mentioning having the stack trace, you know, with the little labels, we've done that extensively, and that works a lot of times. The problem we had was we did not notate leaving the entry, so that if you went, you know, say three levels deep in a calling structure, and each time you put in the fact that you went this piece out, this level deeper,
mm-hmm.
but coming back out, the levels were never replaced. And so you came back out, and then you had an add end, and then, well, where was I at? It, you know, it says I was in this three levels deep in a calling structure, but yet my data is showing that I'm, you know, someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we ran into that with the labels, with that not, you know, not keeping up with the fact that we went down a level but didn't return back out. So that was one of the problems we ran with that one. All kinds of fun things.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Thank you much.
I'm making notes of all these, yes.
We have no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Kathy. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.